Hello, and welcome to episode 19 of Virtually Relevant. I'm Eric.
I'm Josh.
And this is Kevin.
And we are on the cusp of Facebook Connect on September the 16th, this upcoming week.
Facebook Connect?
I know. Yeah. So, I mean, is this the seventh Oculus Connect minus the Oculus? Is this the first Facebook Connect? What is this?
I think the prestige that comes along with being one of the hallowed few that went to all of the Oculus Connects demands that it be put to rest, and it now is Facebook Connect 1. But that's just my personal opinion.
I'm okay with that. I got a very nice I got a very nice commemorative hoodie out of that that honor. But yeah, this is part of a huge wave of rebranding by Facebook. The word Oculus is disappearing off of all sorts of things. They've gotten much more aggressive about their Facebook Reality Labs branding. They don't mention the word Oculus on the new Oculus Connect. You know, you have to wonder how long it'll be before you you see a headset that doesn't specifically call out the word Oculus on it. You know, Facebook Rift and a Facebook Quest. But, you know, there was talk at the last Oculus Connect about it being the last one, and that they were going to fold the VR content into a track at F6. So, I mean, at least they've maintained a separate event. Admittedly, it's a one-day online-only event, although I'm sure most of that is being driven by COVID. But at least we should get some product announcements, and we have been promised a John Carmack talk, which is kind of an interesting thing, given that Carmack has significantly stepped back, right?
Yeah, and I really hope that they still give him the creative license to just riff for an hour and talk about whatever he's passionate about, because that's probably one of the number one things that I look forward to Connect for.
They need to stick a webcam in the hallway outside of his office, and then as soon as he's done recording the keynote, have him walk into the hallway and then just like ramble endlessly and answer questions from people on chat.
What is that thing from Silicon Valley where it has like an iPad on a motorized thing?
Yes.
Just surround him in iPad robots that just bump into him and bombard him with nonsensical questions,
and then ask him for selfies.
Yes. So.
Yes.
See, he's not going to need a license because he just does it anyway.
Yeah.
it's just guaranteed.
Well, here's an interesting question. Considering that this is the first Facebook Connect, technically, and it's only a one-day thing, it's all online. After COVID is settled or whatever ends up happening in the next however many months, what do you guys think is going to happen for Facebook Connect 2? Do you think they're going to realize the cost savings is just too immense and they're not going to bring back a physical Connect? Do you think this is the start of a new trend? Like, I mean, that's probably a question for conferences writ large, right?
But that was kind of what I was about to say. This isn't really a Connect specific question, although
the timing,
they have been deprioritizing it.
They were talking about putting it in F8 instead.
Right.
You know, all this idea around shifting it or changing it or rolling it into something else. I'm really wondering if we're going to see another in-person live conference.
I think there's a decent chance we won't. I mean, there's definitely downsides to not having a physical conference, networking being the biggest one. The second biggest one certainly being able to try pre-release hardware, actually getting a sneak preview of what's coming up. But they've been trending in recent years towards mostly only letting press do that anyway. The last 2 years where they were demoing Quest, I guess prior to Connect 6, that was press only. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it is... Conferences are extremely expensive, and they tend to put them on in extremely expensive cities. And I would not be shocked if people start really rethinking the entire conference paradigm, and hopefully come up with something that's a decent replacement. I don't think we've landed on it quite yet. It definitely feels subpar, but
look, I mean,
we'll end up with something.
It would only cost Facebook like $150 billion to buy everybody a Quest in the United States. So just...
So, yeah, we're speaking of Quest. It'll be cheaper for them to do that, we think. It's, you know, coming up here in about a week. There was a leak on Walmart's website where a product listing page showed up for what certainly looked like the Quest refresh based on some various hints. It was using a placeholder image from the Oculus Go. They were calling what, Point Reyes?
I think so.
Right, which fits with their code naming, where they always name things after
some kind of landmark around the area, around the Bay Area.
Around the Bay Area, yeah. So that would be, I mean, it's interesting because we thought it was Del Mar, right? So it turns out either Del Mar was something different or maybe they did a rethink and readjust. I don't know. But it looked like the two price points for the 64 gig and the 128 gig were each $100 lower, which would be certainly consistent with the idea that they were making some cost-cutting changes, like moving to a single LCD screen and maybe ditching some of the mechanical complexity around the IPD slider. They definitely look like they're ditching the cloth wrapping. Just all these things that make it... Here's the thing. I mean, it's... Even if all of the price of the parts came down on the Quest, which they do over time, it's still an extremely expensive piece of hardware to manufacture because it's complex. It's got a lot of very fidgety steps to it that make it difficult to scale up and difficult to push costs down. So at minimum, it looks like they're shifting to something they feel like they can scale up and get some cost savings on. And then second, if they can get it on the market for $100 cheaper, that's going to dramatically broaden the base of people that are willing to buy it.
Bringing the price point down for a standalone, very capable headset, especially when obviously Facebook is dumping all of their effort and attention on the standalone market. Right. I mean, it's just only going to bring in a whole new swath of people that were on the fence about the $400 price point before, obviously.
Right. And I know a lot of people like that. I know a lot of people who are very excited about the Quest and think it's very cool, but not they're not in a position to drop $400 on a standalone headset. Although I think it's worth remembering, just going back a little over a year back, before the, you know, the Quest release, and you know, we were all speculating on what price they would release it at because we knew it was going to be more expensive to produce than the Rift because you had to package a CPU and a GPU, you know, a system on a chip in there and stack of cameras, all these different things. And we were all, I think, very impressed they managed to squeak out a $399 price point. That felt like a sort of a miracle. So the fact that just a year later we're coming in $100 even lower than that on what may turn out to be slightly more capable hardware is it's really kind of a remarkable thing.
Okay, so while we're going down the speculation rabbit hole, let's go ahead and just dive further in, right?
All right.
If you consider that the previous Quest they were at least taking a wash on production.
Yeah. Right.
And let's say that the new hardware is slightly tweaked and improved, but let's say that it's probably comparable to the cost of when they originally did the outset of the Quest 1.
Right.
Do you think that they're taking a $100 loss per system, or do you think that it's some kind of a min-max game that they're playing? Because, I mean, really, it looks like they're... For everything else in consideration, they are doing everything in their power to hit that, you know, 1 billion heads and headsets kind of
mark. They're trying to broaden their market share. And I mean, where they're really making their money is off of, at least at the moment, in VR is off of their share of app sales. I'm sure eventually it'll be data monetization. But so the more hands they can put it in, the better. My assumption is that they're probably landing it pretty close to break even. But with the expectation that as production scales up, that they'll be able to actually turn a modest profit on it.
Like, kind of like
I think they would, the
Bezos or the Netflix business model, right? Just
right.
Spend money and then
yes.
Until you have no money and then borrow more money to spend more money for like
right.
a decade and a half and then own the entire market.
That's the goal, certainly. I think they would be entirely happy to do nothing but break even in return for just greatly broadening market share and from their point of view, hopefully monopolizing that space. We haven't seen a credible non-Oculus competitor to the Quest in the United States. I mean, the closest thing sort of is like the Vive Focus, but it's really not a consumer targeted device at the moment. You've got some competitors in Asia. You get the Pico Neo I or Pico Neo 2 and Pico Neo 2i in China, but in the US there's just nobody is quite playing this game yet. I fully expect someone to jump in with both feet at some point, but at the moment Facebook is running away with it. And you know, they're doing a lot of R&D and that they're trying to keep this a moving target. So, I mean, at some point they're going to jump in with a true second generation and make it even harder for other people to catch up. But, and I'm all about them, you know, using their deep pockets to push the state of the art and solve the hard problems. But I would really like to see some competition in this space for the standalones.
Yeah, I think with this, they're also helping to keep Apple at bay with constantly moving the goalposts there.
It's certainly a thing worth doing, although my impression has always been that Apple is more focused AR. On AR, right.
Yeah.
Which is not to say that Facebook isn't. Facebook just, I mean, they've currently got, you know, the lead in the market on VR, and they're pressing that as hard as they can. But I have absolutely zero doubt they're working as hard as they can on getting AR headsets up and going. They've hinted as much, and you know, last year they acted like they were going to have some big AR announcements, which they really, really did not, other than saying, confirming they were working on an AR headset. Do you guys expect any actual interesting AR news in this Connect?
I don't think that we're going to see any like pricing or anything, but I do think we'll see some mock-ups, kind of like how we saw some advanced half domes from right. the previous Kinect, because they have to, like you're saying, they have to have that pushback against the other players in the market, the Apple, the Alphabet, people like them that are doing a lot of, you know, black ops R&D, quote unquote,
right.
that they don't have a lot of intel on. But they need to appear to be pushing against and trying to maintain this sense of dominance, at least from my perspective.
What about pass-through AR? We've seen leaks out of the SDK and even some assets like videos that look like the Quest potentially maybe doing things like cutting through your keyboard on request, or cutting through your couch, or at least being aware of where your couch is so that it can ghost something in and you can sit on it. Do you expect to see them push that space significantly this time?
With the current headsets, I don't think so, because the cameras on the headsets I don't think are good enough. And for AR in general, I'm not really expecting too much. I'm hopeful. But I feel like if they mention anything, it'll probably be very much phone based or phone AR.
Okay.
But not really too much in the way of a AR headset.
It does feel like a space where they could differentiate a Quest refresh without alienating their base. As long as they can play the exact same games, there's no game that you could only get for the Quest S or whatever they're going to call it. That you can't play on the regular Quest, but you can see your couch and sit on your couch, or you can cut through your keyboard, or you know, what have you. There's, you know, some wording for, what was it called, Infinite Office?
Yeah.
And I mean, they did their kind of vision video, Abrash did, of what an augmented office could look like with people sort of virtually sharing the same space and talking to each other and sharing assets and so forth, which I thought was a really nice sort of aspirational target document to build towards. And I at least hope that we're going to see some baby steps in that direction. At least with the leak that we saw for the Quest refresh, you don't really, I mean, they've actually made the inside out cameras angled further out, which should improve the tracking volume, but makes it in many ways worse for pass-through AR. And it didn't look like it had any additional cameras in the front for that. So I'm certainly not getting my hopes up too high for a really super capable AR device, pass-through AR device. But I mean, at the very least, some nods in that direction. As I said, I've always said that if I can see my keyboard and my coffee cup and my phone optionally without taking off the headset, that goes a long way towards eliminating the need to just flip it on and off all the time, which would be incredibly useful to me.
Yeah, well, just and headsets just being able to be flipped up while not taking the whole thing off. Like,
yeah,
how about that quality of life?
I would love that, although they kind of went a little bit that direction with the whole double tap to pass through shortcut, which sort of works pretty well. It's not terrible, but it's sometimes it's sufficient, sometimes it's not. I've yet to see a flip-up HMD done well, at least not one that I've personally gotten to try it. They always feel off balance, and they're usually cutting off the top part of your vision. So,
yeah.
Or when you flip them back down, they've got terrible light leaks all around. So,
right. I mean, there's definitely a lot of headroom for improvement.
Yes.
But I think... Yeah. I think it just needs to be something that's thought of because, you know, just sometimes you need a break. Like, you just need to give
yes.
your face time to breathe.
What do you guys think? This particularly, and especially the question for Josh, since you've got kind of your finger more on the pulse of the business market. What do you think they're going to do with business pricing on the Quest Refresh?
I think if I was Facebook, I would keep the OFB pricing the same. The Oculus for Business would remain $1,000 because then that's just more margin that I can make as Facebook and recoup some of the cost lost from a consumer side of things.
I mean, it's definitely going to depend on what their goals are. With consumer, it certainly seems like their goal is to put as many headsets into the market as possible. On the business side, what you're suggesting implies that's not their goal. Is that correct?
Honestly, it feels like the opposite of their goal with consumers. It's their goal with business is to keep them at as far past arm's length as possible and keep a huge, you know, thumb on whatever they're doing to really watch how that evolves, because I really don't feel like they are focused on business or really give too much credence to its potential to grow the market. So I as much as I wish they would change that mindset, as much as I and all of my customers that I talk to about standalone headsets wish Facebook would realize what they can do for the market, they don't seem to be making any decisions that speak specifically to growing that, other than to saying, yeah, sure, we took someone else's product, rebranded it as Oculus for Business, and yeah, if you want to order from us, you have to go through us.
Do you think their attitude would change significantly if a credible competitor to the Quest came out and did embrace the business market?
Yes. Yeah. I think especially if it was, you know, picked up by X number of Fortune 100 companies that all bought fleets of them.
Right.
You know, this moving the goalpost will drive off a lot of businesses because they want something that's stable and reliable and predictable. They want to know hardware refresh is every X amount of months or years. They want to know what's coming, what the price differentiation will be, how they can maximize ROI from investment. They need to know all these things to validate the purchase, to validate the implementation of the project and all those kinds of things. So it's hard for an innovation leader or a CIO or something along those lines that to try to gauge how to properly implement this kind of technology in their business unit when you have really just a burgeoning market. You don't really know how to read the tea leaves because the tea leaves haven't settled. So all this upset and all these changes and revisions actually hinder that process rather than make it faster. So I think we're probably going to see a lot more people leasing instead of purchasing fleets. I think we're going to see a lot more interest in companies like Pico that aren't as burdensome as what you have to go through with Oculus for Business. So it should be interesting to see what comes after Kinect and what news we hear from there and what their competitors will do in response.
Okay, and I was going to ask about that. So you don't think that Pico is really a competitor to the Quest when it comes to business?
No, for business, yes, I do think it is. Okay. I think because it comes out cheaper, right? A $700 yeah. Pico Neo 2 has marginally better hardware, and it's completely essentially rootkitted Android. So you can do whatever the heck you want with it. Whereas if you invest in Oculus for Business, it's $1,000 per headset, period. And then even then, you're agreeing to all the stipulations and agreements with what Facebook demands. And there's some information sharing there and some stuff that you have to go through. I mean, it is a lot more geared to what businesses need. They need to be able to own their data and keep it behind their own closed doors and things like that. But Pico Neo definitely appears to be offering a much more business-friendly solution. The only problem with that is you don't really have the content availability like you do coming from Oculus and Facebook, who is still investing a good, healthy amount of money in content creation.
Fair enough. Something else I'm expecting to see some significant details on, you know, next week at Facebook Connect is Horizons. It had a presence at last year's Connect, but it was a little underwhelming. Does anybody remember the details of that? Their booth?
Yeah, it was like a toddler booth, right? Like you go play with little toys and you built. I'm kidding. It wasn't toddler
toys. It
was
pretty close.
But it was pretty neat, and it really spoke volumes, I think, to what they were trying to get across for Horizons. They're like, look, we say you have to be 13 or older to use our products, but really we would love it if you just started from the womb. Please.
One of us. One of us.
Well, they're going into private beta now. And it's more than apparently just social experience. They're you know, aiming for VR world building. How are people feeling about this particular implementation of the Oasis?
It's like if IOI built the Oasis instead of Gregarious Games.
I think that's fair.
It's scary and endearing at the same time. Like I don't know how to reckon with these feelings I have about this, because you know it's going to take a lot of money and a lot of investment of time and effort to build something as audacious as something like the Oasis, or even 0.0001 alpha of the Oasis. But I wish it was anybody but Facebook building it, to be honest.
I agree. And I mean, I know this is shallow, but if it could have a little bit less of a play school aesthetic to it, I mean, if we're going to take a cut at this, can we at least make it look cool? But there have been some reports out from people who've been testing. Apparently, at least in its current state, if you connect up with a party and then you exit Horizons, they can still hear you until you actually exit the headset. So if you get testing it, be sure to keep your opinions very polite and quiet until you've completely powered everything down.
And if you're Ender Wiggin, you find a way to invisibly join those parties and listen.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, apparently Horizons, at least as of now, is using Oculus parties to actually connect people to chat. And then, so of course, thing is how Oculus Parties works is whenever you're in a party, it takes over your microphone and doesn't allow anything else to use it really. So it's kind of, it's like Horizons is starting up its own little, parties, but Parties doesn't close on its own. It just stays up until you close it, which is what, you and I found out. A while ago, Eric, when we were on on a Quest, and I'm sorry, I was on the Quest, and we were in Alt Space we had set up a party to kind of chit chat, and
right.
hopped into AltSpace, and I couldn't figure out why my microphone was not working.
Right.
You know, come to find out later on that, oh, there's parties running in the background. And then, of course, as soon as I actually turned that off, then I was good to go after that. But yeah, that's kind of annoying.
Now, the assumption is that Horizons is going to be one of those features that requires a Facebook login, correct?
Oh, I'm sure. It seems to be that they're kind of selling the idea as Facebook for VR. Like, this is where they want you to live, essentially. And I wouldn't be surprised if they started to move the whole, like, personalized room environment to a personalized Horizon environment that you could just right. very easily walk out into the Horizons and do other things. But slowly but surely, it'll be just like your Facebook feed wall.
Right.
You know, another interesting concept that a friend of mine and I were tossing around is with Facebook building this platform, how much power do you think they're giving their admins of the platform? Like, do you think they're going to be hanging out in everyone's room, invisible, just kind of sitting in the shadows, seeing, oh, we're just here for, you know, to make sure that everything maintains, you know, smoothness right. and it's not glitchy or anything, but go ahead and keep having these very personal, private conversations while I'm here.
Not with Big Brother around.
Right. Yeah, I think if you have any expectation of privacy at all, you should rethink that. Certainly in Horizons and probably throughout the ecosystem. So,
Would you pay for a platform that
knew
for certain that you were 100% private?
Yeah, well, I'd pay extra for a platform that I was convinced wasn't turning around and selling my data. So,
would you pay $600 a year for Facebook not to record your information?
No, I think you found my limit. I don't know what the at least not in the short term. I mean, I pay more than that for internet access, you know, over the course of a year. So, I suppose I could get from here to there, but at the moment, that's beyond what I would be willing to pay.
Kevin?
Yeah. I certainly not 600. I'm sure there's a price that you could find. Maybe 200 a year.
What if you could pay a nominal fee and only share certain key information that you were willing to share? Like, if, you know, your taste in, like, that you like comedy movies over horror movies or whatever kind of mundane thing that they're looking for, would you be interested in sharing? This is not just, you know, VR, but it's kind of a question that's we're all facing in this crisis of ever evolving technology, as it completely outpaces our ability to regulate it. You know, what are we comfortable as individuals sharing with people so that they can market and make money off of the services they provide while making it continue to be relatively affordable, if not free? Eric.
As long as I have confidence that I am getting to choose what is being harvested and marketed and so forth, I'm fine with that. I've always been fine with that. My discomfort has always been with the fact that they very quietly move the goalposts or shift settings, reset things. It just all feels very disrespectful of their users' privacy, autonomy, integrity, all these things. So, yes, I mean, there's things I'm certainly happy to share, you know, my tastes and certain things and so on. But I mean, I don't necessarily want them to know my religious or political views, for example. So that's, yes, some subset of things I would be willing to share.
Kevin?
Yeah, as like one thing that I've always thought of is I kind of don't really care what they what they learn about me as long as they weren't actually tying it to a specific person. you know, if
it's anonymized or aggregated, it's okay.
Yeah, it's like I've never really cared too much. Just as long as like absolutely everything wasn't tied to a single person, you know, with the name and all this, you know.
Well, but there's a little bit of a slippery slope with that, in that you can anonymize the data, but there's only one person in the world that is running Windows 10 that also is two major updates behind, that is also on version 10.2.6.3 of Mozilla Firefox, that is also running Discord in the background. You know, like there are fine-tuned details that can be pulled all together from even multiple sources that can take an anonymized data set and individualize it and know exactly who you are based on your normal uses, let's say.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. That, you know, or eventually someone can just figure out, you know.
So right.
Number 3042 sounds a lot like this guy named Kevin. You know, it's like, but still, overall, I've thought about that quite a bit, and that's kind of always been my final take on it, is just as long as it was that anonymous person.
Well, you know, one of the
I've never really cared.
One of the things that, you know, has been done to combat this, and or at least to say, let's think about it for a moment, was the implementation of GDPR, right? And it's this giant, just flustercluck of legalese that's basically tries to give people power to remain anonymous and allows them to withstand the might of giant companies with their never-ending legal teams of always pushing forward to take and take. But we're starting to see some ripples in the VR industry now, right? From something happening in Germany.
Yes. Yes, there's a disagreement between Facebook and the German regulators on the appropriateness of some of their data management choices.
And now, of course, this is just a rumor, but you know, this is what people suspect. It hasn't been absolutely confirmed anyway, but
I'd be interested if anybody's out there that's listening from Germany, please let us know if you can't find any quests all of a sudden when there were some.
But yeah, apparently Facebook is halting the sale of their products right now in Germany. They are continuing to sell what they have in stock, but they will not be replenishing stock.
Which I think is kind of common for situations like this, like the whole snafu with, I think it was Huawei in the United States. You know, the stuff that's already been imported, that's already cleared customs, is kind of like on sovereign soil at that point or whatever. And there's a whole other mess that you would have to deal with in order to try to get rid of existing stock, and to, you know, who's responsible for the cost and who's left with what burden. So it makes sense that they would allow the units that are existing already within their borders to continue to be sold at the list price. But it is interesting that this is all falling at a time when Quest is potentially getting an uplift. So like, is it really doing anything to Facebook other than kind of a slap on the wrist? Do you think this is sending a message that people are wanting to send? I mean, if you read the Twitter posts, everybody's saying that they're selling their Rift. So it's interesting to see the backlash that things like this cause.
To me, it's not really any backlash, because apparently Facebook decided to do this on their own. You know, and they're not the one to back down. They're the one to be like, whatever after the fact. But So they themselves have apparently decided on their own to, you know, not replenish stock. So I think another big part that plays into this is it kind of gives even more power to the rumor that, you know, we'll see a refresh of the Quest, you know. So they may not even really have stock to replenish it anyway, because they're probably not producing them anymore. So,
you know, going up against GDPR seems like a really interesting marketing tactic.
As long as this doesn't extend significantly beyond the German market, I would be shocked to see it shape Facebook's behavior much. I think you'd have to lose a significant portion of the earth before they would start significantly changing their data gathering practices.
But kind of going back on that a little bit, back to Horizons. Speaking of the Big Brother, apparently Facebook has come out and said that while you are in Horizons, you will actually be fully recorded. Your whole session will actually be recorded.
Oh, wow.
For the whole duration. But supposedly it will never be seen by a human unless someone files a report. Then at which point someone from Facebook will then be able to take that recording to see what happened. So
is this like...
And then at that point, supposedly it will be deleted.
Yeah. So is this like, you know, Facebook promising Palmer that, you know, you'll never need to log in with Facebook, or Google's do no evil clause? Yeah, maybe it's just not as important anymore. You know, maybe we want to watch everybody's recording and store it permanently forever and ever, right, for marketing purposes.
I certainly would not be in any way surprised if they turned around and changed their policy after the fact. I mean, giving the maximum benefit of the doubt, which I don't really do, but just for the sake of argument, it is a very tricky needle to thread, how to make a social environment feel safe and hospitable and so forth, with, you know, people being nasty and harassing and so forth. It's difficult to come up with a paradigm for handling that. So I understand potentially how you might land on that as a solution, but when you pair it with, and it's Facebook doing it, and they're storing these things and keeping them, that they might turn around and use them differently later, it certainly adds a degree of wariness that they're being completely altruistic in their choice of how they're managing it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're trying to do what Zuckerberg's purporting, which is put that many people in a headset, you got to build this sense of feeling safe using the platform. Sure. And I feel like these are some really odd missteps to be making along this process. Even if you have to record it for XYZ purpose, they should be going out of their way, in my opinion, to tell people why it's necessary, but why it's also intrinsically safe the way they build it, you know? Like,
well, I think you would have seen that sort of focus from them if some of the original Oculus crew were still with the company. But at this point, Oculus has been entirely subsumed. Everyone who was involved with Oculus at the beginning is gone. They're stripping the Oculus branding off of everything. This is a Facebook operation from top to bottom. And Facebook isn't attuned to that. I mean, their entire business model is data collection. So,
and that's, you know, that's the crux of the problem, I think. That hits right to the marrow, because when they were Oculus, when they were a company operating under the Facebook umbrella with the original team, so to speak, it felt a lot more clandestine project that they were working towards, and we were all in the ship together, and everybody was looking for the bright new future of VR. But with this rebranding and getting rid of the old guard and revamping the entire power structure and how they do things and rolling everything under Facebook, that means just intrinsically, right, they have to focus on marketing, because Facebook is a marketing company. That's what they do. They sell ads. Right. So how do you solve for X? How are you as Facebook going to tell your shareholders who want to make more money off of the shares that they hold that you're going to make them more money year after year. And the best way that you can do that with this very expensive company that you bought would be to continuously force more marketing into it. And that is pulling data out of it to use and churn back in more ads. I mean, there's not much more around it. That's kind of the quick and dirty of it, right?
Right. I mean, it's always, there are always challenges on finding the right balance between capabilities and privacy and so on. Pushing significantly further in the capability over privacy direction, would we like to talk about Neuralink?
Yeah, it's very easy to sit and talk and bash what we don't like all the time. I mean, I want to just have a stipulation here that both on the recording and off the recording, we all talk about our frustrations with the way things are or aren't going, and the things that we do and don't like, and we are, I believe, all grateful for the positive things that Facebook has done. And there are countless people that are incredibly talented doing amazing things, both at Facebook Reality Labs and at their competitors, that we're internally grateful for. We just hope that they take some of the feedback from the community and pull their head a little bit more out of the sand and realize that we're all pushing this boat together. Let us continue go down the correct path and see that better future realized.
We criticize because we care.
Yeah, there you go. So Neuralink.
Neuralink. So if you were looking for a direct brain implant to measure whether a pig's snout was touching something, Elon Musk now may be able to help you.
That's the single most pressing issue of 2020. I cannot think of a single other thing in this year that is more important than knowing how many pig snouts are touching something at this given moment.
Hey, if we can all download our consciousness into a computer, we won't have to worry about too much, will we?
It's
I'm ready.
I mean, obviously this is very, very, very basic proof of concept. This is, purely proving that electronics can, brain implant electronics can safely and reliably read something, anything coming through your brain in a meaningful way. And of course, the next big step is for it to go the opposite direction and actually introduce information. It doesn't get much more basic than what they've chosen there. But it does appear to work. And, obviously we'll be watching to make sure that the pig doesn't develop a brain infection or go into seizures or anything like this. But, I mean, you have to do these extremely basic low-level experiments to prove things out before you can move forward, even consider moving into something with humans. And certainly something as complex as the direct brain interface that I think we all hope at some point, or at least those of us who are crazy hope at some point, would allow you to plug a cable into your skull and truly experience total reality replacement. Be able to experience, smell and touch and taste and so forth that's simulated in ways that are simply not possible with an external device.
And in the article that I went over, they were also talking about how they're tracking like the movement, like as they're actually walking, right? Either of y'all hear that, or was it just the snout?
I don't remember that, but I may have missed it. So,
yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. The kind of technology that they're using doesn't seem to be extraordinarily groundbreaking, other than its size and its efficacy level and the ability to track multiple sensory inputs.
It almost seems silly for them not to put an accelerometer and so forth in there. But the heart of this, the thing that is what makes it notable and important in a stepping stone, is the fact that it's reading electrical signals going across neurons and interpreting it correctly. We hope. We think.
Probably. I mean,
possibly. Can we prove them wrong? No. I don't know. Did anybody see the pictures of the brain implant robots with these sort of like helmets with drills in them? Looked somewhat unnerving.
I did not see that.
Yeah, I am somebody who, in a very long-term sense, am very excited about the idea of direct brain interface for hundreds of different reasons, not just for VR. But I'm also one of those people that will not be waiting in line to be implanted with the first generation.
Well, you don't want to be stuck with, you know, Frogger Atari level graphics for the rest of your life, right? I mean, you want at least, you know, Xbox 360 or something.
So it's interesting. And I mean, it's a cool direction, and, you know, obviously only someone with Elon Musk's resources and almost total lack of interest in what anyone else's opinion is to push forward. So I guess I'm grateful that he's pushing the state of the art on this, because this work has got to be done. And it's work with a stunningly long time horizon towards profitability or even viability. So hooray for what kind of amounts to pure science. You don't see a ton of that being done.
Really interesting to see someone invest in space.
Yes.
Underground tunnels. Flamethrowers.
Yes.
And
electric cars.
Brain interfaces. Yeah. Electric cars, of course. Very interesting.
This actually just reminded me, man, this was, I don't know how many years ago, but I remember watching a little science documentary or kind of a little piece on some doctors that had actually taken some brain cells from a mouse and put it in a little petri dish with a circuit board that had it already on there, and the brain cells actually started to create links through the circuit board, basically using the circuit board as neurons. So I remember this was what, maybe like 15 years ago, I think I remember hearing about this. But so now I'm kind of wondering if in the future this might be something where this is actually done at a very early age, maybe even inside the womb, so that as a human develops, they actually have this, you know, it truly becomes a part of them.
Sure. I mean, if you had an electrical detection mesh that the neurons actually grew through as part of the growing process, that would dramatically simplify the process and reduce how invasive everything would be. Obviously, there's huge practical and ethical considerations there, but yes, what you're suggesting would absolutely, in some ways, be the best way to do that.
Yeah, I'm struggling to remember the name of the show. I'm pretty sure it's on Amazon Video. It was kind of like an extrapolation of a Black Mirror episode where they had this device in their eye that allowed them to record and interact with everybody around them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And but, like the mother like turns it off for her daughter so she doesn't see anything bad. Yeah.
So they made a whole show about diving deep into this concept. And I'm going to spoil something right now. So if you want to watch this show, I guess pause it or fast forward the next 30 seconds. But at one point, it's found out that one of the children of, like, the grandchild of one of the executives was an experiment, and they kind of did what you're talking about, where they sent in some nanites or whatever they used. I forget what they used in the show, but to make it grow into the brain as the baby developed, so that there was no chip when the baby came out. They were just born already on the network, already tuned in and keyed into everything. That's definitely... obviously, it's something people are thinking about, right? But we've been doing experimentation with the brain for a long time, right? And we've been sending electrical currents into the brain and seeing what happens and sensing what the brain waves are doing. There's been those toys that you can put on that, like that kind of hat thing and make the ball move, right?
Right. Yeah.
That or make the it controls the drone, makes it go up and down.
Right. 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 But I mean, so like it's not exactly a new science, but tapping directly into it. And it, like Eric, you said earlier, the goal of eventually being an input output device rather than just an right. output is where it really starts to get science freaky, I guess.
Hopping from one end of the scale where we're talking about future tech that, you know, may or may not come to fruition at some future date, let's talk about tech that's definitely coming out right now. NVIDIA just did a big presentation.
And very soon.
Quite a lot of it from their CEO's kitchen. Weird times we live in. Announcing their next generation of the cards, their video cards. How are people feeling about those?
Well, I'm definitely excited. Even though it has thrown a lot of my sales cycles into kind of a limbo as people decide whether they want to wait for the next best thing or go ahead and pull the trigger on getting a 2000 series. Well, I will say though, they seem to spend a lot of time in their presentation trying to say, look, if you have a 1080 or a 1080 Ti, this 3000 series is finally more powerful enough for you to upgrade. Like, because right. I guess no one that had a 1080, 1080 Ti decided the 2000 series was a margin growth big enough to dump the cost. You want to go in a little bit in that the cost breakdown, because we were talking about that before.
Holy
the podcast.
Smokes. Yeah, the... It's interesting because, I mean, traditionally you had the whatever 70, the whatever 80, and the whatever 80 Ti. And then later on they'd fill back in some other Ti's and Supers and so on through the market. But the 70, the 80, and the 80 Ti were your high-end parts. They've released a 90 series, the 3090, which is coming in at a stunning, was it $1,400, $1,500 price point? $1,500.
$1,500.
And the reference design is wider than a two-slot solution, isn't it? I mean, it's a beast. It's a three-slot card for
$1,500. I believe it's a three-slot.
Now, that said, I mean, it potentially could play 8K games at 60 frames a second. So it's a beast of a card. We certainly need to get outside confirmation of performance and so on. I mean, they certainly have also focused heavily on RTX performance. And while I love ray tracing, I'm excited about ray tracing, I do think ray tracing is where many, many high-quality things are going. They're focusing on it, at least in part, because some of the biggest improvements to the card with the Tensor cores and the RTX cores are focused on RTX performance. So how big of a performance boost you get in non-RTX titles, I definitely want to see outside confirmation. But if their claims are correct, the 3070 should be equivalently powerful to the 2080 Ti? Is that what they said? And what's the price point on the 70? 500. So you're
500.
For $500, you're getting something that's equivalent to what was like a $1,200 chip.
$1,200,
and that's stunning. That's huge. So, and then the 3080 is significantly faster than that, and that's what, 800? 700. So
$700.
For $700, you can have something that's significantly more powerful than a $1,200 card from a year ago, or even arguably a week ago.
Yeah, they say two right. times the performance
so
of a 2080.
So if these specs hold up, and if these specs are not kind of cherry-picked best-case scenarios from ray tracing titles only, these cards are beasts. And VR is always hungry.
Right.
While
but it's not really a ray tracing arena. So, like, definitively, will the 3000 series be a huge leap and improvement for VR? We can absolutely say maybe.
Yeah. Where ray tracing really gets interesting is if you can combine it with eye tracking. Because if you can concentrate all of your ray tracing on the fovea, the foveated area, and then just kind of, you know, rasterize everything else, you could produce photoreal stuff at retina resolutions. Right. Obviously, there's a lot of steps between here and there, but
and for the uninitiated, most a lot of people have been hearing a lot of different things about ray tracing and RTX, and you know, the whole meme of RTX on, RTX off. But what you have to understand is ray tracing happening is for those of us in the industry is about dang time, right? Like,
right.
There's had been so much blood, sweat, and tears put into creating content that is ready to be produced, that's invested in, and all this stuff, just to make it work on prior existing hardware and prior methodologies. Being able to do stuff like real-time ray tracing makes creating really compelling, really good-looking content so much more accessible to indie studios and so much quicker and less expensive for the AAA studios. So what this means with the industry pushing into this and leaning into it means we're going to have a shorter roadmap to content creation being published, and we'll eventually hit a diminishing returns, right? And this will also lead towards the evolution past ray tracing, because we were kind of stuck before ray tracing. We were in the old rasterization model. But with ray tracing, beyond ray tracing, you'll have path tracing and all sorts of fun stuff that come after it. But you had to have this first major step in this break from everything being rasterized.
Right. This is arguably the first big paradigm change in graphics and graphics acceleration in probably 20 years. I mean, since they first started, you know, producing graphics accelerators, this is an entirely different paradigm for calculating what you're seeing. And the headroom for getting more realistic images out of it is stunning. We are in the early days of ray tracing, but you know, I remember playing with doing ray tracing using POV Ray, you know, on a PC, you know, 25, 30 years ago, you know, producing a 320 by 200 image that took 6 hours to render. And yeah, I mean, a lot of game design is built around avoiding the things that our existing model does poorly. Our existing model handles glass and reflections and multiple light sources, dynamic light sources, very poorly. Those are all extremely expensive to do well. And ray tracing, they're sort of baked into the cost. So suddenly you can, you know, be walking through a room full of, you know, crystal bowls and chandeliers and light sources moving around, and you're seeing realistically the lighting modeling through those things and light bending through these things. You could do some incredible things that we've just sort of been dancing around and avoiding. And in theory, you can get something that's complete. Yeah,
it's really
it's all been about trying to find techniques that made it look plausible, but weren't really correct.
Right. If you wanted to do reflections, you had to recreate the content in the reflection. You couldn't just have it intuitively understand that.
Right.
This
you were creating another camera and re-rendering the entire scene from that camera, and then painting that out into the scene.
Even if it was just for some smoke or dithering effect, like it, you had to do so much recreation, or decide that it wasn't important enough, right? That's what usually ended up happening, was you had these great ideas and ways to make it more realistic or more compelling, but it all got cut because the budget just isn't there.
Right. So, I mean, there's things like water that are traditionally extremely hard to do convincingly that should, as this moves forward, become trivial to do flawlessly.
Come on, you know, we peaked in water with Sonic the Hedgehog on the Dreamcast.
That's fair. That's fair.
Sorry, Kevin.
No, you're good. But yeah, I was going to say about water, you know, for the longest time, it's been basically they just take a kind of a muddied picture of something from the scenery, stick it in the water, and, you know, and that's that's your reflection, quote unquote, you know. But if you're making a game, having to spend the time doing that for every single little puddle in the whole game takes a lot of time and money. But now that
just goes away. It's exciting to see NVIDIA really, like I said, leaning into the importance of ray tracing and really honing the computational power of their devices, of that technology, because it pushes the industry to also change their metrics and their paradigms of building and success and all that, to focus on leveraging what's available. Because I'm going to buy a 3090.
If I win the lottery, I'll definitely get one. I want one. I'm coveting it, but holy smokes, is $1,500 a lot for a card? I mean, that's Titan territory.
So that's what a lot of people are saying. So the 3090 is basically taking the Titan moniker and just putting it all as a familiar type of branding, where, you know, we have the Core i5, Core i7, Core i9. You know, you have the 70, 80, 90, and I'm sure we'll see 60s and 50s come out too distant future as well. And I wouldn't be surprised if eventually we see the Quadro just start to kind of go the way of the Dodo and become this RTX line. The GeForce line just takes everything under one umbrella.
It could well happen. I don't know. They managed to milk a lot of money out of the graphic design market using the Quadros. So,
yeah, I want to see someone do some benchmark stress testing of a late model Quadro, top end Quadro versus the 3090, because the thing's a beast, man.
Yes, it is, and that's the upshot. While the things we're in some ways the most excited about are future things that maybe not even this generation, it may still be 2-3 generations down the line before we get the full delivery of the promise. These sound like screaming cards, and they are dramatically improving performance at every price point. So that's a good thing for desktop VR. And hopefully we see some of that tech spilling down into the mobile market eventually, as these things tend to do.
Has there been any talk about Virtual Link for any of these?
That's a good question.
So I was actually just going to say, the 3090 is the only one that is going to have Virtual Link. However, this is all NVIDIA reference cards. These are not partner cards. So I really, really hope that the partner cards that come out later on will have Virtual Link on it. Because I never really quite understood why, you know, a card will have five inputs that are all, you know, display ports, you know, or this and that. It's like, why not just take one of those out and put a different kind of output on there?
To cover your bases. Believe, uses a Virtual Link, so their dual 4K, or I'm sorry, their 8K headset.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see cards still supporting that, because I think in my professional experience, I love anything that reduces the amount of cables. Like, I just, it needs to be important, people. Come on. I have enough damn cables in my life. And I'm trying to set it up. My business partner, has a looking glass 8K holographic display, right? And that thing takes two display port cables. And then we also have a Vario XR1 that takes two display port cables. How do I plug that into one graphics card? How can one graphics card even drive all of that? Maybe a 3090 will. I will definitely tell you guys once I have one of these in my grubby hands.
Yeah.
How that works out.
All right.
But another little note is something that I've liked about NVIDIA, though, these past couple announcements that they've had, is they've yes. been pretty quick on their turnaround of when they announce to when they actually launch the product. And that I know of, that I can recall, this is actually the fastest one. It's usually been they have their announcement, and then they come out and say, you know, basically product will be on the shelf in about a month to 2 months.
Right.
This is basically 2 weeks. The 3080 is going to hit shelves on September 17th, and they announced it yesterday, which is September 1st. And so kind of going on that, I'm hoping that this is something that Oculus will actually do as well, with the hopeful refresh of the Quest, is that, you know, they'll announce, because they basically did yes. that with the Go, right?
Yes, they had a short turnaround time.
Except for they basically said, right. "Oh yeah, you can go get one now," pretty much. You know, I'd of course absolutely love it when companies do that. You know, and instead of saying, "Oh yeah, but you know, you can get one in a year." But so I'm thinking with how quickly NVIDIA was able to do this, I'm thinking and hoping that Oculus will be able to do the same
thing.
Here's
hoping. Well, we will know a lot more in about a week. So next podcast we do, we should actually have quite a lot to talk about. And I hope they are good things and exciting things.
Yeah, before we shut this down, I have one more little thing that was very interesting to me. Again, back to the whole cabling thing I brought up. HTC is now selling a extension kit for Vive Pro and Vive Pro Eyes. So if you're out there and you know, you're in a situation where you need to set up a computer in a different room or something, for the low, low price of $600, you can get wow. a 20 meter extension.
Gosh.
So 65 and a half feet of slack, sold by HTC, so they've tested it, they know that it works, to extend the length from your computer to, I believe, the link box.
Do you know how much effort it would take to drag that link cable behind your skull? Might snap your neck.
So, you know, so does that mean we're soon going to see some extension of, you know, base station tracking? Some bigger layouts? It might be interesting. Maybe a tracker 3.0. Who knows? Some things to ponder, just, you know, outside of the realm of just Facebook, right?
Here's hoping. Always looking for news from other companies. So,
and I want to leave everybody a personal note to everybody out there listening. If you're in the United States, please go register to vote. www.vote.org. If you need information on checking your registration, on finding a place to vote in your area, it is super important. By the time this airs, it'll probably be less than 60 days to Election Day.
Everybody stay safe, do cool things in VR, and then tell us about them. So we'll see you next time.
Adios.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Virtually Relevant. If you liked it, please consider rating and reviewing us on your favorite podcast app. It helps bring us up in the charts and makes us easier to find. If you'd like to support Houston VR and this podcast, please consider becoming a Patreon member at patreon.com/HoustonVR. Until next time, thanks for listening.